tiny changes in your churn rates are going to make a huge difference in your bottom line.
Welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast with Craig Hewitt and Dave Rodenbaugh. This is a podcast documenting the journey as self-funded business founders and sharing lessons, tips, and tricks for businesses following the same path as ours. The journey is long and winding, but we're glad you're joining us for it. And now it's time to go rogue with Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome back to Rogue Startups, episode 98. Dave, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. And yourself?
Doing good, doing good. My brain hurts a little bit, which is not an unusual thing, but we're on vacation, and I've been driving on the left side of the road for the last week, and it is just like, it is just the ultimate mindfuck at times. Yeah, it's really challenging.
I hated that when I was in Australia. I felt like I had to have this constant internal monologue about, okay, don't turn right. Don't turn right. Don't turn right. Like, you get to a stoplight. I'm like, all of these ingrained driving habits, I had to like sit there and keep talking myself out of all the time. Yeah, that's a total mental drain at this point. And the time that I was in Australia was pre Google Maps and stuff like that. So my wife was navigating with a paper set of maps that we had in there, which, you know, only adds to the stress. But thanks. Thankfully, she actually got us where we needed to go, and I didn't have to do both at the same time. Like the times I've been in countries where I have to do both at the same time. Oh, God. Suck.
Yeah. Yeah.
So stressful.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's challenging just especially like when you are on the road by yourself and another car is coming and you're like, am I about to get hit? If you're in traffic, it's fine. Just follow everyone else. But like, if you're coming up to an intersection, you're the only one. You're like, when and where do I go? I have no idea. But yeah, it's amazing. I'm this old and I have no idea how to drive. So.
Yeah. Are they shy about using the horn in Ireland?
They're decent. Yeah. It's not. It's kind of like France, I guess. They're more aggressive than the U.S., but not terrible.
I kind of appreciate the gratuitous use of horn in countries where I'm not familiar with the driving customs there, because at least I know that if I fuck up, that somebody will tell me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, so we're in Cork right now, which is the home of Teamwork. I actually got together with Peter Coppinger and some of the guys from Teamwork yesterday and nice. Saw their badass campus here, which is like home to 130 something working souls. And
wow.
Dude, it was totally impressive. I mean, it's a legit startup, you know. It's yeah, it's pretty amazing. So he gave me the tour and we had a coffee and stuff, so it was pretty cool to see what they're doing, and they're 10 years into it. So I mean, they were really some of the early guys of SaaS. I heard his talk twice now, MicroConf Europe 2 years ago and then MicroConf last year, which is great, but it's just cool to be able to catch up with he and a couple of the other guys there. So yeah, really, really awesome experience. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. How are things going with you?
Good. I am juggling a lot of stuff lately, just trying to handle little plugin updates and support questions that Bobby has, plus blog article editing and keyword research for the next round of stuff, plus support for recapture, getting updates here, bringing a new developer up to speed. You know, just I feel like I'm switching gears so much constantly that it's hard for me to focus on any one thing. If I get done at the end of the day and I've checked everything off of my list, even if I'm exhausted, I'm like, all right, mission accomplished.
Yeah.
It's Miller time. Even though I didn't get shit done for myself, at least I got all that stuff checked off on my list. So I know everybody else is productive at the moment and things are moving forward. That's what matters.
Sure. Sure. So, yeah. I mean, more than a few months in, how do you feel like the balance is between the plugins and recapture and any of your consulting too? I mean, is it sort of manageable and you're able to do it all pretty decently?
I think it is. You know, it always is kind of shifting, and you know, it doesn't feel like there's a status quo that I ever sort of achieved or a steady state. You know, for example, like in the last 2 months, my freelancing job, we've been pushing a release, which it was supposed to culminate this past week, but they pushed it out because of some minor issues that weren't related to stuff that I was working on. And so I've been spending sort of disproportionately larger time on that for the past 60 days. But in that time, I was able to do it because Bobby had taken off the support off of my plate from the plugin. So I was not spending time with that. So any extra time I needed to spend with Recapture, for example, was available because I didn't have the plugins eating into that. And so I feel like right now, you know, Recapture is going up because I've got, you know, Audience Ops doing content stuff for me. And then I've also got the developer who's working on features and trying to fix some various support issues and bugs and stuff like that. And I'm engaging one of the original founders to try to get some stuff fixed in the Magento connector that's not easy to pan out to that or push out. So, you know, overall the balance is constantly changing and hard to strike. But I feel like where I'm at is still a good place because now that the freelancing is ramping back down, that I will have all of this extra time coming in for Recapture to do other stuff as I need it. So, yeah, I feel like it's going good.
Yeah. It's nice. It sounds like the level of work, like where you're working in both the plugins and Recapture, is similar, right? You're not in the weeds, but you're kind of managing the team and delegating tasks and thinking strategically. I think that's really important. I think it probably would be real easy to get in the weeds with Recapture, which I know you have done some just to get to know it a lot better. But at this point, it sounds like you're rising up a little bit to operate at a little higher level, which I think will move the business forward a little faster.
Yeah, part of the reason I never got the developer sooner, you know, some of it was a cost issue, but some of it was I felt like I needed to be in the code a little bit to understand things, to be able to delegate it. And at some point, I realized that it was no longer serving me to be there. So getting out of that, I think, was a plus. Although, you know, that basically delayed getting things out 6 months compared to where, you know, things were at before it was purchased. So I'm sure that the customers feel that that's a little bit of a drag. But, you know, we're on track now to get something out probably in the next 6 weeks. So I feel like we're going to be making up ground now considerably. And what was nice was I actually got the previous founder involved in answering some questions for the new developer. And one of the comments that he made was, oh, you're asking some fantastic questions. I mean, that's really great because not everybody would ask those kinds of questions. So I felt, you know, vindicated on the point of I actually made a good Node.js hire, not really knowing much about Node.js development and developers in general, but that it seemed like I got a good fit for somebody who truly understands the depth and the breadth of what they're trying to work on here. So, you know, that's good to – it's good to get some feedback to know that your process is actually producing quality people that you want to work with, not just guessing whether you're hoping it's good or not. So
sure. No, that's great. It sounds like you're on the right track for sure. That's awesome.
Yeah. How are things going with Podcast Motor and Seriously Simple Podcasting, the not easy to say product name?
That's a whole nother story. But, you know, things are going good, man. We're continuing to develop some new features and improve what we already have. We're actually very close to releasing another major release of the plugin, which will change kind of the whole way we upload files, which is going to make it a lot more robust, which is awesome. I'm very excited about that. And we're kind of just one little bug away from releasing that. So it'll probably go out Monday. So yeah, it's good. And Podcast Motor is good. It's growing. The last 3 months, we've been up quite a bit. So yeah, it's good. You know, people are coming into podcasting. I feel like we're, you know, our messaging and our positioning is still really good. I'm probably going to find someone to help with some of the day-to-day stuff that I'm still involved in here pretty soon, to kind of take myself a little bit further out of the minutia and the day-to-day business, talking about kind of like where you're operating with your two businesses. I feel like sometimes I definitely get in the weeds with Podcast Motor still, and I just have to take myself out of it and let someone run most of the regular operational business that Becky is not doing. And so that's just something I have to to do and put a little bit of process into place for, and then the business will be pretty hands off. I say pretty, like entirely hands off, and I really need to and want to spend all of my time on Seriously Simple Podcasting because it deserves it, and it can be a really cool, great business. I just have to spend the time on it. So, yeah, starting to think about like marketing and growth and stuff like that is fun but daunting. But yeah, my trip to Teamwork yesterday definitely kicked me right square in the ass to get into growth mode.
Well, I guess that's better than getting kicked in the balls.
Yeah. I mean, their revenue is just insane. I mean, it's another world, but it's cool to see somebody that you can kind of relate to doing that, because then you're like, why not, right? Why can't we do 20 million a month or whatever?
Sure, sure. But, you know, you never want to compare your beginning to somebody else's middle or end. So, you know, you have to sort of balance the I'm inspired by this, but intimidated by it at the same time, you know?
Yeah, no, that's totally accurate. Yeah. That's totally accurate. Yeah. 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 Cool, man. So today we're talking about the Wicked Witch of the West, right?
Yeah, I suppose so. So we kind of got into this discussion earlier in the week when we were trying to figure out what we were going to podcast on. And I realized that I've spent sort of a disproportionately large amount of time in terms of management and support around the notion of churn with recapture. And the more I read about it, the more I dig into it, you know, the more I try to read statistics and look at my own reports through my churn tool to understand what this is all about. I mean, you can go so deep and so so complicated with this stuff. But this one metric feels like the one thing that was killing me for a while back in March and April. You know, my churn rate started going up. And as soon as that did, I panicked. I was like, oh my God, the world's coming to an end, because it was eating up all of my growth. And I had to figure out ways to combat it, because I felt like if my growth gets eaten up by all of the churn that's here, I'm never going to get anywhere. And, you know, I ended up spending like two and a half months putting stuff into place, understanding what was going on with churn, figuring out what made customers leave, at what stage were they leaving, you know, all of this stuff takes a lot of time to sort of figure out and get your head wrapped around. So I thought maybe today we could chat about this on our own businesses.
Yeah, no, sounds good. Sounds good. Yeah, we're just, so we're 3 months, just a little over 3 months into launch of Seriously Simple Hosting. So we have just a bit of kind of real churn data. Right now it's good, which I think should be expected, but yeah, I think that generally the thing that a lot of people don't realize when they're just getting into SaaS is that what you think might be like a low number of churn, 5%, 7%, means that you're replacing between like 50, 60, and 100% of your customers every year. So when we look at like our business right now, we're just below 5% churn. So we're replacing, right, like 50-something percent of our customers every year. So all those new trials you're getting in every day that you convert whatever percentage of, you're then losing a pretty good chunk of those as well every month. And I think that when you look at growth and like sustainable growth, you fight so hard to get new customers. And the beauty of SaaS is with a recurring revenue model is that customer is going to pay you for 2, 8, 10, 30 months. And the longer you keep them, I think the easier growth is. I don't know. You know, Josh Pigford talks about this metric that they have, and I'm blanking on the name, but so I went back and researched this, and Josh calls this the quick ratio. And the quick ratio really is a measure of efficiency of how well your business is growing in terms of churn and expansion. So how they calculate the quick ratio is new MRR plus expansion MRR, so growth, over contraction MRR and churn MRR. So those are lost customers or revenue. Okay, back to the episode. And I think that's a really interesting thing to look at when looking at churn and like efficient growth too.
Right. One of the misconceptions, I guess, I had about churn until I really started looking into buying a SaaS was that when people talk about their churn numbers, they're talking about monthly churn numbers. So that right there is not something that you necessarily think about. You think, oh, 5% churn, you know, that's 5% of customers in a year. No, it's 5% per month. So even like good churn rates of 3%, that's still 25% annual turnover, or a really good churn percent of 1% is still like 10% of your customers are gone every year. So this is like the one thing that if you're going to focus on in the business, it's going to make a huge impact, because a leaky funnel is eventually going to prevent you from filling your bucket no matter how many customers you start putting in at the top. So you gotta cut that down as low as you possibly can and figure out exactly when it's happening and where it's happening. Now, we had a tweet just before we started this podcast today about the fact that churn is a trailing metric here. It really only tells you what happened in the past. And that's true. And so from that standpoint, you know, turning it into something that's predictive is hard, but by understanding what happened in the past, you at least can go figure out what's broken right now and try to make an impact on it, and then you're going to have to wait some time to see that. There are other things that you can do about like usage metrics and engagement that you can measure with your users and things like that. That's going to tell you some stuff about right now. But I also think that if you're looking on too short of a time window on that, you're going to end up sort of overcompensating, I think. If you start to see users behaving in one way, and maybe it's just a few users that are doing that, but you sort of are looking at their engagement compared to everybody else, and you think that that becomes a predictive thing, it ends up driving you in the wrong direction. So I kind of like a slower approach to it. So I don't know. What do you think about that, Craig?
Yeah, no, I think you're right on. I think, first of all, with any kind of metrics, you have to be very disciplined not to overreact to them. And I mean, looking at your Baremetrics dashboard every day is going to literally drive you nuts. And I do it. All right. Hi, my name's Craig. I'm an addict. I look at Baremetrics every morning. But I don't really do anything with it, right? Because, I mean, first of all, we're only 3 months out of launch. I have a vision of what the next few months of our product look like. And what Baremetrics tells me is not going to change that a lot, right?
No.
So I think that's important. And sounds like you're in the same boat. You know you have a couple things to do, and they're probably aimed at getting new users and keeping engagement and activation high in your existing users, which is going to make for a good business. So I think those are kind of like fundamental things. But I think when it comes down to it, for me, and our buddy Justin Jackson was tweeting at us a little bit about when we tweeted out about our topic for today, that like usage is the thing that drives and like engagement is what drives keeping users around. I think that's true. But for me, that's like an inherent thing with your app, right? Like if you have a good abandoned cart recovery tool, your customers are going to love it and need it and use it all the time and can't imagine life without it. And that's kind of something you have to like bake into the core of your app. And if you build a thing that's not really useful or not really like super helpful or doesn't solve a real painful problem for people, then you have a really tough time increasing usage and engagement with your customers, and your churn is going to suffer as a result of that. Like you're saying, it's like a lagging indicator. But I think if you've solved the right problem to begin with and you engage your customers on a regular basis and they see value from your tool, then that should be taken care of. We don't have any measurements around usage right now. It would be great to see how often people are publishing podcasts or something like that. But I don't know what I would do with that, you know?
Right.
Right now.
Yeah. For the first like 3 to 4 months, I think, after I took over Recapture, I was obsessively going into Price Intelligently and ChartMogul when I had that active and just checking things out every month. And looking at, well, not even every month, multiple times a week, as if that somehow was going to make me a better SaaS owner to know all these things that were happening. And to a certain, it's good to be aware of some things, but you can definitely over obsess about it. And I realized at some point, this is not helping me. Like getting these notifications that somebody immediately churned, all that did was stress me out. So instead, you know, I put some other things into place to make it so that something could go try to, you know, find out why these people churned or ask them about, you know, if it's a delinquent churn, like go and start a dunning email sequence and stuff like that. But instead of me having to manage it every day and see that stuff and panic about it, I kind of look at it as an overall thing and try to decide, am I still growing? Am I heading in the right direction? So I still get daily emails from Price Intelligently. It tells you how far you are on your monthly goals. But as long as, you know, I'm headed in the right direction, I stress less about the absolute numbers and more about the fact that I'm making positive progress.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So, speaking of Price Intelligently, Patrick Campbell sent out an email this week, and that's kind of what our episode is based on with this like ultimate ebook guide to SaaS churn, and that's where some of our thoughts are kind of based. But really, you know, you break down churn to kind of three different stages or like phases, right, for a user. The first is like the early stage, so it's in the first month when somebody churns out, and I think this is typically a poor connection of like your marketing message and what the product actually delivers. So like they're not getting value out of it, or they're not getting the value that they expected based on your marketing message or what they were sold. And so I think that if you're seeing a high churn in the first 30 days, then it's probably just a matter of you sold a set of goods that's not really there, or you're not letting your customers realize the value of your tool right away. So like for us, one of the things that I think has helped both activation and onboarding, but also just signups, is we have like concierge onboarding, right? So we import all of your podcast media files from wherever you are into WordPress and into our solution. So I think it's helped raise engagement, because like instantly they're set up, right? And we take care of all of it like in a couple of days. It's really at this point pretty easy. But I think that's done a good job of activating people. And the few people we have had churn have not been a part of that. They've just been people who've kind of been kicking the tires. So yeah, I think whatever you can do in the first month to really get people on board and engaged and using the tool and seeing the value is huge. And that goes back to kind of our onboarding email discussion from a couple episodes ago. I think that's just really key, is onboarding somebody the right way through email or in-app messages to have them see the value and use the tool and stick around at least past that 30-day mark. Because I would suspect overall, and like someone like Patrick or Josh would have numbers around this, after 30 days, churn probably goes way down.
Yeah. And for me, with Recapture, I've noticed that there's really two very distinct buckets of customers. There's basically customers that have a newer store and just don't have a ton of customers or a ton of revenue coming in right now, but they're still kind of interested in an abandoned cart solution because they've heard about it. They know they should have it. But when they go and actually look at how much they're recovering versus the cost of the service that I offer, they're like, I'm just not getting a ton of value out of it. And I'm like, you know what? I understand. The one thing I've really started to get is that if somebody shows up with a store of the right volume, like the value is so blindingly obvious at that point that the only thing that would stop them is either you're just not giving them the kinds of emails or the look of the emails that they want, or they just liked another tool better because it had more features. But there's no reason for them not to go with you because you've clearly demonstrated value. And that's the only thing that I've really seen, is that the people that have said, yeah, you know, I'm not sure about this, they're usually the ones that I look at their store volume. It's just low. You know, they're getting a couple $100 a month, and they're not really willing to spend 50 to get that extra couple $100. And I get that. And there are people that are getting tens of thousands of dollars a month, and they're like, $99? Yeah, sure, no problem. It's a no-brainer at that point, right? But the magnitude of that number makes that decision unbelievably easy for the user.
What have you thought about a free tier for these kind of starter stores, or like a $5 tier?
You know, I've had people suggest it, and I've noticed that they experimented with lower price tiers, and it might be a sort of a freemium model that I could bring on earlier stores to let them build their volume with me. But in terms of like growing absolute MRR, you know, there's a disproportionately large amount of customers there that, you know, they're still asking for the same sorts of things that I would give other customers, like segmentation, which I'm only allowing at my $99 plan, or they want custom email templates, which I only allow at the $99 plan. So they still want all those things. They just don't want to pay for it. They want to pay $29 or $39 bucks, or, you know, sometimes $19 bucks. There's some people that are on $19 plans. And, you know, I think just from an early standpoint, I'd rather have customers that paid more, that valued the service, as opposed to ones that are going to be, you know, giving me more support requests and more stuff. Because I'm toying with things like concierge onboarding so that, you know, that my base plan becomes $99 and I do all of the stuff to bring you on with a full set of emails, and I do a review based on your business, and we go through and target things to the tone that you want for your business and stuff like that to get people in at those higher rates, because it just feels like something that gets me higher quality customers, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Shit. Yeah. I mean, okay. So my very little experience has shown me that the concierge onboarding is fantastic. So for the first 10 customers for us, it was hard. I had no idea how to do it. At this point, we can move 10 gigs of podcast files over and import them into WordPress in 20 minutes, you know? And
whoa, yeah, dude. My best Keanu Reeves impression. Whoa.
No, but I mean, so we've done it whatever 30 or 40 times now. So yeah, I mean, I would suspect if you went down that road, you would struggle at first and it would seem like a pain in the ass, and then you would say, wow, this is the way to do it, and this is kind of the 80-20 of how to get these people on board and get them set up right, and have your templates and stuff built out. But yeah, that's interesting. But I think that that's a great example of like showing early activation, and getting higher value customers in.
Yeah. And the ones, you know, I don't see a ton of the ones that have, you know, lighter volume stores. So it feels like I'm targeting the right market segment as well. The ones that actually have stuff that's going on, as opposed to the ones that are earlier in their e-commerce process. So I think it's just a better value alignment with them. So that's why I haven't really gone down that road again. Also, the fact that I've got a lot of data that shows, you know, they have a fair number of these customers that are on there, but I don't know that it's necessarily the right move at this point. Maybe at some point I would do that. I mean, Drip obviously turned around and offered a free tier for 100, 100 contacts on your list or something like that. And that started dragging in additional people. And then once they get, you know, to the aha moment, then, you know, people are more interested in upgrading to the base plan once they pass that 100 customers, because now they've got workflows and other things like that. But that was a growth tactic later in their life cycle, not earlier. So
yeah. After they were acquired, even, I think, right? I mean, they had the dollar plan around the time they were acquired, but the free plan was after with lead pages. I think so.
Yeah, and that was it was a support issue for them. Like, they knew they were going to take on a ton of support to do it, and you have to have resources for that. Same with me. I don't really want a high support burden on recapture. I want to get customers in that are going to get high value out of this, and that, you know, are not going to be costing me 8 hours a day every day trying to make sure everything's working for them. So
yeah, for sure. All right,
so moving on to the next stage of churn here. The middle stage is, you know, between like 30 and 90 days, so between 1 and 3 months. The things that sort of really factor in here as to why people leave your service has to do with, you know, quality of the service you're providing. You know, is your app up all the time? Are you good at customer service? And do the features that you offer really meet the needs of what it was that you you promised them and what they need at this point? Is there a good overlap on that? And so far here with Recapture, I've noticed that our middle churn is very low to non-existent. Like, once people sign up and get past that 30-day period, they pretty much hang out beyond 90 days at that point. What do you – I mean, you don't quite have that data yet with Seriously Simple Podcasting, but what's your feel on that so far?
Yeah, I feel – so in general, I feel like our churn should be low. It's like once people get set up and quote like the app, right? Because they have a podcast, they need hosting. Moving is difficult unless someone else offers concierge onboarding, because moving around gigabytes of files is not easy if you don't know what you're doing. And yeah, I mean the little bit of churn we have has been right around the month time. Like someone gets a 14-day trial, they get charged. If they get charged and then they want to cancel, it's pretty soon after. But yeah, I think in the 30 to 90 day period, we should have very low churn because people will be on board and using it, will have wanted to complete their trial. See, I mean, the little bit of churn we have almost is like people who didn't realize their trial is expiring, even though we send them an email, and get charged and they cancel really within the first 30 days, even though we have a 14-day trial. So they convert and then cancel. But yeah, I think the difference there is that we are trying very hard to and need to stay up with our competition in terms of the features that they offer. And that's what you're talking about is like, what can we offer in terms of stats and uptime and things like that? And it's just infinitely more complex with WordPress, but we're doing everything we can to make our system WordPress proof. So yeah, but to answer your question, I think it should be low anytime after 30 days. And something this discussion has brought up, we probably do need to have some sort of usage metric to say, have they uploaded a file in the last month? And if not, we probably need to send them an email.
Yeah, stuff like that. You want to make sure that they continue to be engaged with your product. Which brings us, I guess, to the next phase of churn here, which is like the late stage. Anything older than 3 months for all practical purposes. And the reason that people churn at this point is that the value proposition that you offered is simply no longer interesting to them, or they've just, they're no longer engaged with your product. They've gone dormant, and they don't need it, or they're not getting more out of it. So you have zombie accounts, and that's really tough at this point. So this is the other kind of churn I've seen in recapture, where people who have been with the service for like over a year or at least 9 months or something like that, they've left. But in my case, the reason that they left was they were largely going to competing services that simply offered more features. So this is where I'm scrambling to catch up at this point to make sure that I can offer those features and give people A, a reason to upgrade, and B, a reason to stick around because I can grow with them. And I knew that this was like one of the things about recapture that just needed to be added to it when I bought it. So that's one of my ongoing struggles here is just to, keep up with those features and make things happen in a time frame that's fast enough to keep people interested and also solicit, what is it that the customers are looking for next? I've done a couple of churn surveys at this point, and I found that they're looking for a couple of specific things. So that's bubbled right to the top of my development list. And, that's pretty much going to keep me busy, I think, until the end of the year at this point.
Yeah. You have a good opportunity, I think, to provide upgrade opportunities for your users at any point, but probably through their life cycle, so 90 to whatever years of use with your tool to, like you say, once their store gets more mature and has more revenue, they need more features to better identify those abandoned cart users and do a better job of recapturing them. But
Yeah.
I think that's great because you're doing two things. One, you're going to reduce that late churn by adding features or giving your users the ability to opt into a more feature-rich tool, but you'll also be able to get into that negative churn area where the same user starts paying you more. That's something we didn't talk about at the beginning, but regular churn is losing users or losing revenue. Negative churn is really the same people paying you more money overall.
Right. And those are like, that's the holy grail. That's awesome. That's exactly what you want. And for me, my key metric right here is the number of emails they send per month. So the more ways I can get them to send email, the more reasons they would have to upgrade to a different plan. So obviously, it's in my best interest to give them more types of email to send, more ways that they can engage their customers, more ways they can make money, because that means I'm going to be able to make more money as well. So the more value I can give them, the more value I can extract out of a price plan. So
yeah.
So you had alluded to the types of churn here. You know, let's talk about bad churn versus good churn. We've already talked about what the notion of good churn is here, negative churn. But let's, you know, tell me about what kinds of bad churn are there out there.
Yeah, so within like bad churn, I would say either user or revenue churn. And of course, they're kind of related. But if you have multiple price tiers, you could have a user stay active, so the user wouldn't churn, but they would downgrade their level of service. You would have revenue churn. And yeah, I mean, either of these are bad, and I think are a sign of low engagement and customers not seeing the value of your service or your tool. And I think that when you look at what's causing these, customers typically are going to, hopefully you're asking, like, you're going to ask the right questions. I know, Dave, you have some things in place to ask these questions when people want to cancel their service, but I think that you pretty easily should be able to say, like, what's that 80-20 of people wanting to cancel or downgrade because of a particular reason? Identify those, like you say, move those to the top of your development list so that people at least will stay around and not downgrade or cancel entirely, and then hopefully upgrade to a more feature-rich plan.
Yeah. And, you know, I think at this point it's probably important to talk about how we actually reduce churn here, because we can talk about the calculations of churn and all of that stuff is a huge pain in the ass to get into unless you're like a serious math nerd and really enjoy just getting into the nuances of which users you put into the buckets and which ones you're talking about. And, you know, is this a cohort of 30 days or 60 days or 90 days or, you know, stuff like that kind of gives me a headache anymore. And I was a physics major. So yeah, that says something.
Nice.
Yeah, but so, you know, I would recommend just setting up a tool where they can give you these statistics offhand, whether that's Barometrics or First Officer or Price Intelligently or ChartMogul. It doesn't really matter. A lot of them, you know, they've spent a lot of time figuring these things out. So they'll give you some numbers that are very, very reasonable at this point. And then you can decide which metric you want to pay attention to the most. But once you look at a metric, the thing that you really want to care about is, how am I going to make this metric go down? and so, like, for me, for example, I was having a ton of MRR churn from delinquency. So people would just not update their credit cards, or it went over their limits, because there's, you know, depending on which country you're talking about here, I have users that are in Brazil and Nigeria. And they have like all of these bizarre banking rules where they have certain amounts of daily limits on credit cards and monthly limits on their charge, not just what we would consider a credit limit, but different limits on top of that. And so, like, for example, if they went out and bought something for their business and then you charge that same day, your charge can be declined. And then a couple of days later, because they're still in their limit of the window, it still gets declined. And it's just like super frustrating to find these things out. So, you know, you need to have ways that are somewhat automated to handle some of these things here. So in my case, that was putting together Dunning emails and actually putting that in place. The previous owners actually had stuff, but what they would do is just send it out manually whenever they'd get a notice from Stripe. They just would wait for the notifications that come in an email that says, hey, this charge failed. And then they would send something out manually, and they would do that on a manual basis. But, you know, I'm finding that you would send four different emails and you had to time them and they didn't respond to any of those emails. So if you forgot to send those emails, then you would get screwed and lose that churn, lose that revenue. So putting a Dunning solution in place makes a huge difference in dealing with delinquent accounts. And it sounds like such an obvious thing to put in place, but obviously it was not that obvious because the previous owners didn't do this and they just handled that stuff automatically. And it got to a point where I was spending way too much time on it, and it just got super frustrating. It stressed me out to see this stuff and when they wouldn't respond. So now I just have a straight up Dunning sequence to go through. And if it still comes at the end, then I send a personal one on top of that with a screenshot of what they're doing in recapture. In some cases, I can tell just by looking at it, like if their store died, and I've had a couple people's stores where they just shut it down. And I'm like, all right, well, they just let it go. So there's nothing I can really do about that account. But some people were still making, you know, thousands of dollars a month on recapture. I'm like, okay, well, maybe they're just not aware of that. So maybe I'll go to their store and I'll find their contact form. But then it's just me sending one email after four automated ones went out. And that is so much less stressful. And even then, it's so much more successful at that point, because your system has been trying to do it automatically. And a lot of the times it'll just pick it up and it'll work. So that's great. You know, I highly recommend that. That's made a significant dent in my churn.
What are you using? What tool are you using for your Dunning stuff?
I'm using Stunning for Stripe by Richard Felix and their team.
Cool. Yeah. So I signed up Serious System of Podcasting on Baremetrics, and then they launched their Recover tool, which is a similar kind of deal. And it's done, I'd say, an okay job. So we use Stunning for Podcast Motor, and I am probably going to give Recover another month, maybe. But I just sort of like intuitively don't feel like it's doing as good of a job. I don't know how complicated the tools are and what the technical differences are between the two, but I don't feel like we're recovering a lot of delinquent charges right now through the Baremetrics tool. The difference is we have whatever, like 20 customers with 25 customers with PodcastMonitor, and we have, you know, 100 and something already with Serious System of Podcasting. So just the magnitude of difference is pretty staggering. So, but totally agree that some sort of tool to do this for you is great. And then, yeah, I think in all of them, you can set up an alert to say, okay, this guy went through the Dunning sequence, he's delinquent, and he ended up being sort of dormant or inactive or delinquent or whatever you want to call it. And you can set up alerts like that to shoot you an email to then send out that manual one. That's great. I've sent a couple of manual ones when people fail to convert because their charge was declined. So the Recover tool from Baremetrics doesn't apply until, or only applies when someone converts. So when their trial to paid charge doesn't go through, their tool doesn't apply. I don't know if Stunning would do the same thing, but I handle those manually.
So I think Stunning does. Stunning has a wide variety of emails that you can send. I'm only using their Dunning ones specifically. Okay. But literally 30 some odd different types of emails I could send in my customer lifecycle. So they are very, very detailed on that. They have a lot of options. I couldn't tell you what all of them are because I'm only paying attention to the Dunning aspect of this here. So.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
and Richard's a good Louisiana boy, so we gotta give him the love.
Sure. Gotta give him the love. Yeah, Richard's great. I love his content, and you know, so we'll just give a little more love for Stunning here. I've been signed up for his email content for years. He has fantastic stuff. So if you're running a SaaS and you're not signed up for Richard's email list on just his content, like they have all kinds of great stuff about how to run a SaaS. Tips on customer service, and it's not all just related to his tool. I think it's like maybe 1 in 10 that come out that are related to his tool. Just other stuff is great. And I was subscribed to his list for over a year before I started using their tool. But of course, this is exactly what he wants, right? He wants him to be at the top of your mind. And, you know, his content did a great job at that. And it's very high quality. So I have nothing but good things to say for those guys.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. For sure.
All right, so how else are you suggesting that we reduce churn here?
Yeah, so I think that the two things that really come to mind are price being aligned with value, and that seems kind of obvious, but if you're in any sort of competitive space, you should be pricing yourself in some way relative to what your competition is doing and the type of product that you're offering. So assuming that you're kind of benchmarking your tool and its abilities versus your competition and what's already out there in the market, then that should be kind of in place. And then I think the caveat there is the charge, just charge more mantra that everybody's going around with these days. And I think it falls short a little bit when you are just charging more because you feel like you can. And I think customers are getting more and more savvy and saying like, Okay, well, Joe offers A, B, and C and charges $20 a month, and you charge only A and B and you're charging $30 a month. What the fuck, right? So I think probably we're seeing more and more people misaligning their price versus value. So that's an obvious thing to get right. But then the other one is really, we touched on this earlier, is getting people engaged and using your tool and getting the value from it really quickly. Really quickly being like the first week. I don't have data around it yet, but I'm sure that if someone uses your tool and gets value, recovers abandoned cart revenue in the first week, they're going to stay for a long time, especially if they're a higher value customer. So that's kind of like the big one that's maybe a little tougher to quantify, but that's the kind of the spirit that you want to be working towards, I think.
Yeah, I can't remember who said this, but I want to say it might have been Patrick McKenzie, but I don't think that it was. It was about getting to an aha moment. If you can do that early on, whether it's in the onboarding, whether it's in the first week or within the trial, if the user doesn't have an aha moment with your tool, they don't want to pay for it, or their reluctance to pay for it goes way up. So the sooner you can make that aha moment happen, the better. So for me, the aha moment is just showing them the analytics dashboard after they've been signed up for the 14-day trial and see that they've recovered $2,500 and my tool only costs $49. They're just like, yeah, duh, I'll take that totally. That's an easy aha moment. But the question is, what's your aha moment? If you don't have an aha moment, or you don't know what that aha moment is, you need to figure that out, because that's the way you're going to get your users engaged and motivated to stay with your product or service. Which I guess brings us to our last way to actually reduce churn, and that is, when somebody leaves, the obvious thing to do is ask them why. So whether that's having a dialogue during the cancellation process that says, why are you leaving? Pick one of these four reasons. Or if it's not on here, type in a little sentence. Get some data behind that. And depending on how good your tool is to do that, you're going to get some information on it. I've done that with a plugin for a number of years at this point, because people have to install and uninstall plugins all the time on the dashboard. I've gotten some skewed data, because sometimes on the uninstall, people get asked this thing and they're like, oh, I'm just reinstalling because I'm having problems with the site. So I get a lot of data like that, and you just totally can't use it. But a lot of the times, you can find out, is your product too expensive? Is your product not providing them enough value? And get some specifics about that. I've run different surveys here with Recapture to find out why people left. And that's when I found out that people were just leaving for other tools that had more email marketing features, which told me, okay, I need to add these features to Recapture in order to be competitive. So that's the sort of stuff you have to focus on in order to reduce this churn. And the thing I think that makes churn so important here is that tiny changes in your churn rates are going to make a huge difference in your bottom line. So if you reduce your churn rate from 3% to 2%, it doesn't sound like much. You're like, eh, it's just 1%. That means you're losing 33% less customers in a year. That's huge. That's insane. Right there is a huge boost to your MRR. So that's why these churn things can really move the needle with your business.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. Well said. I think that we a lot look at growth and how to get the top line, new customers in or new trials or whatever. But churn, reducing churn is really the kind of bedrock upon which you can actually grow the entire business. And so yeah, I think a lot of things we talked about can and should be looked at on a regular basis and implemented as best we can.
So if you have any thoughts about reducing churn that we didn't cover here, or if you think that we're totally off base and focusing on churn, we'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email, podcast@roguestartups.com, send us a tweet, and if you've got a chance and are loving the podcast, we'd love to hear from you in iTunes. Click the link down below. Until next week.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.